Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rivalry Radio on this Sunday in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Clearly, many happier cities than Ann Arbor, that's for sure, as the Michigan Wolverines took a tough defeat. That's the best way to describe it. You could say a lot of different things, but a complete meltdown, slap in the face, whatever you want to call it. The Wolverines were put rightfully in their place by an Ohio State team that was motivated, that was well-prepared, was chomping at the bit to attack the things that they knew they could against Michigan, and they performed. There's no other way to put it. There's no excuse. They were just unreal compared to Michigan yesterday, and they completely outclassed, outcoached, outworked, out-hustled. I mean, you can't. There's so many things you could say that Ohio State did better than Michigan and probably should have seen it coming. A lot of can say they were fooled, but in the end, if you really look at it, we should have seen this coming ahead of time. Tyler's with us. We'll talk Michigan now, Tyler. Obviously, no sad souls in Michigan State land, which rightfully Spartan Nation should feel that way. Rivalry games you don't want to see your rival win, and oh boy, if this was a perfect picture for not only Ohio State fans but the team down the road from Ann Arbor, this was pretty perfect, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, you and I we've talked about strategy a lot, and I think Ohio State's and about coaching and. Look, Jim Harbaugh's just not up to par. You know, he's a great recruiter. Obviously, there's not many, if any, like him. And he is a good coach. But when you look at the great coaches in the conference, I would say that, you know, he falls closer to the middle of the pack. And I'm not trying to disrespect him. You know, the Big Ten is loaded with great coaches. Mark D'Antonio, Urban Meyer, Pat Fitzgerald, you know, Paul Crist, like they're all very good coaches, and I think that obviously that's what won them the game. You know, Michigan does a lot of man stuff. They've done a lot of single high safety man coverage, so if you have multiple guys who can make plays on the outside, the odds of one of them getting free, you know, they're pretty decent. And, I mean, you saw that a lot yesterday. Paris Campbell was obviously the guy. But you can focus just on him because you have Dobbins coming out of the backfield, because you have Weber running it in the backfield, because you have guys like K.J. Hill. And so it really, I mean, when – you don't adjust your game plan for the talent level that you're facing, you know, you're going to walk away with an L, especially in a game of that magnitude. And Michigan knew what they had to do. Look, Ohio State, they were 10-1, but based upon everything that has happened, it was for all intents and purposes a down year. Michigan State just riddled with injuries. This was the year that Harbaugh had to win. And, you know, he just wasn't ready for the big time yet.
No, I think what happens in this game, I talked to you earlier about this, that when you play in this game, a rivalry game, biggest game of the season, and you have the whole year of footage of the other team, I think that sometimes you got to have a great game plan. And I had said to you earlier, I thought Grady Hoke always had a very solid game plan for Ohio State. And I'm mystified that every year Harbaugh goes into this game, there's never something new for that game. It's the same. It's play action passing. It's short passing before the first down marker. It's not allowing your playmakers to make plays enough, which I'm surprised they didn't go deep to Nico Collins as much as they did. He had clearly an advantage over the secondary, and that showed in the end zone catches. But it never seemed like that pass was made. I know they had a few PIs Ohio State did when they did make that throw. That should have been something done right away. You don't need to wait around. You know, if you see something that Ohio State can't stop, you got to go at it. And I'm not going to blame the offense for the loss because it was the defense. But going to that even, the defense also didn't have a good plan where you can put as much blame on Don Brown and saying, you know what, you're a little too stubborn in this situation. This is one team you're going to play that can affect you the most with your press coverage. And you had talked about the one safety over the top. Dwayne Haskins made a great statement that he was chopping at the bit for this game because he knew that his receivers would have so much freedom. And the receivers said the same thing. We knew it was win our one-on-one matchups, we're going to win. And there was just no good plan. And they just got out-executed, point-blank period. And I just think, you know, there's a lot that goes into this. You look at the game, there's a lot being said. Obviously, a lot of motion right after the game. You know, there's a lot of things you can say, and you can point the finger and say Harbaugh needs to go. Really, he just has to find a way to do a better job in these games. He has to find a way to have a better game plan. I don't think it was necessarily Ohio State was that much more talented. I just think they had a great plan, and those talented players were put in the best position. Would you agree with that, or would you just say that still Michigan is so far off Ohio State?
No, I mean, that's exactly what I said. I mean, that man-to-man coverage, you know, the playmakers that Ohio State has, you can still stick with it as kind of a base defense. You know, Ohio State's defense isn't that good. Michigan still put up quite a few points. And so you knew that you could score on them. They did. And you can still, like I said, you can still use it as your base defense, but you do got to mix it up a little bit. And they just didn't do it enough. It left their playmakers open. And look, that's going to be trouble. You know, Michigan State, they like to go man as much as anybody. And if you look at how they played Ohio State, gave Ohio State a lot of points, but that was because of Michigan State's offense being so bad. But they mixed it up. They ran a lot of zone against Ohio State, different pressures and things that Haskins isn't used to seeing. I mean, people forget, and it's obviously easy to forget this is Haskins' first full year as a quarterback. You know, there are still a couple other things that he's not seen in full yet. He probably could have had a second safety up top and done some Tampa 2 type things just to give your secondary, your corners, a break. But I mean, like I said, it's easy to forget that Haskins is his first full season under center. You know, he broke Drew Brees' Big Ten passing touchdowns mark, for a single season, and he did it his first year. You know, the Ohio State, yeah, it's a down year defensively, but look, no one's ever banged on their offense. And you know, yesterday, doing what they did to the number one defense in the country, I mean, it's kind of evident. You know, there is I'm not going to say there's a complete talent discrepancy, because I think that the talent on Michigan's offense and OSU's defense, I think it's similar. You know, there's a little youth there. You've got a couple seniors here or there that can make a difference on both sides of the ball. And as great as OSU's offense is, you know, Michigan's defense just as good. It was just a matter of scheme. And, you know, like we've talked about, Ohio State took advantage of that mismatch. And I mean, Michigan could have changed it up. Michigan State had success. You know, you can copy other teams' schemes. You know, not everything's wide open. I mean, you've talked about it. You've coached. You like the picks and backdoor stuff, and you took a little bit from Tom Izzo. You know, that stuff is available. You know, there's no copyright on it, and Michigan just refused to change, which I got a feeling when we do talk about Michigan State football, we're going to be talking about that a little bit too, the same topic. So,
Oh, there's no question. I mean, the title of this is "Change is Good for the Soul," and you know, both programs have to change a few things, or they're probably not going to get to the level they would like to be at. And for Michigan, the thing that they have to change is putting certain guys in a better position. I think they're recruiting pretty well, so you have skilled guys that can make things happen. And you got to put them in a great position all year. I mean, you can run your stuff and out physical and beat up teams, and we've talked about this all year. Michigan's always going to seem to beat the teams they're supposed to in our box. They're going to out physical them. They're going to show they're more talented, and they're going to win that way. But I think that there's some underlying issues with that, where if you don't get a little more dynamic and try things to get ready for a team like Ohio State, or even a team like Michigan State next year, you have to be ready for a team that's just as talented as you, and you can do different things. And they just never do that under Harbaugh. And that's why they lose the big games, because you can beat SMU, you can beat the breaks off Maryland, you can pound Rutgers, you can beat up on Indiana physically, but you can't do that against Michigan State or Ohio State. You can't do that against typically a Penn State, Wisconsin. So that's why he keeps losing, because he's not able to put his team in a better spot by having a better game plan for a team that matches up with them physically. And that's what happened. The one thing I will say about the offense, even though they scored a lot of points, it was not good the way they scored. A lot of it was late. A lot of it was the game was out of reach. And they had opportunities at the beginning of that game. If you look back, where they got a score. They got a score of touchdowns. And Indiana proved that they could stop them in the red zone. And that was a concern, something that we can drink the Kool-Aid that we want, and we can believe the hype, and we can say, oh, yeah, this is Michigan's year. But you got to look back at the whole thing. You got to say, man, if we can't score in the red zone consistently against Indiana, if we can't score against, I'll even say Michigan State when we have the ball 42 minutes, but we can't score more than 21 points, that's a problem. That's a major problem if you're going to play against Ohio State, a team that has scored on everybody. And I think that's what they ran into. The game, if you look at the beginning, obviously that first drive Ohio State just gashed them. But after that, Tyler, it's 7-3. They got the ball. They throw the ball in the end zone to Gentry. He doesn't catch it. He looked very Sokolish yesterday in the game. I think they traded positions. I think Sokol kind of took a little bit of the hands from Gentry that he had out here. And Gentry said, you know, I'm going to use your hands in this big game.
Hey, Sokol did have a touchdown catch yesterday as part of the senior day miracle, so.
You have to be ready for that big game in Michigan this moment. And they got out of class. And it's back to the drawing board, man. And I'll be honest with you. I'm going to say this because we're going to talk about a lot about both schools. I've changed my whole narrative when it comes to Michigan football. I'm not buying it. I didn't go to a game this year. I'm not purchasing it because I don't believe in it. I don't believe the hype. And I think, you know, even if you're a diehard Michigan fan, why would you? Why would you believe the major hype that surrounds that program when it doesn't match up? I mean, it'd be one thing, Tyler, if Michigan people said, you know what, Jim Harbaugh's doing a hell of a job. 10 wins, I'm happy. If more people said that, I would be like, you know what, this is okay. They didn't win a big one, but you know what, no one likes that anyway. But when you have the attitude that program, that fan base has, and I'm even going to say the players, when your players act a certain way and you say this is a revenge tour and we're out for blood, you better have a major plan, because you're going to go against teams who they don't like it. They don't want to deal with that. Would you agree that it's not only a system problem, a schematic problem, it's a culture problem?
Oh, it absolutely is, and that's what they've been rooted in. I think part of it, you know, they stuck with it to an extent with Brady Hoke, with the whole, we're Michigan. And, I mean, use that as an excuse for everything, more or less. I think he had it dialed back, though. You know, there were issues with certain players, guys like Frank Clark. But now you start now with Harbaugh taking control, you know, apparently there's a older prop, you know, Fish routes from the head back. And, you know, Bush and Winovich, guys like that, you know, they are on the back end. Jim Harbaugh is at the head. It starts up front. It's one of those things where you look, Michigan's a good football program. Historically, they're great, but they're good right now. And when you realize that, you had the number one defense in the country, you had one of the best running backs in the country, you know, you had a much improved quarterback, a quarterback who, you know, but from all signs appears to be headed to the next level, next season. Like, you have the talent there. The problem is a lot of the people, not all of them, but a lot of the people who have a tendency to talk, the reason why they got there is because they're cocky, because they're confident, because there hasn't been anybody better than them. And so they understand that. Now, the problem is these guys, when they come into school, they have the same mentality that they had in high school. Like, look, there's nobody better than me. There's nobody better than me. And when you finally run in to somebody better than you and you get punched in the mouth, you got to be able to hit back. And look, those guys, they weren't able to hit back yesterday. And they were floored. You know, they come out there with this revenge tour attitude and, you know, the wheels on the tour bus fell off, and they didn't recover from that first drive. So, look, it starts up front. It starts with a check. I'm not saying it needs a full-on attitude adjustment, because you got to be a little cocky. You have to be to succeed at this level. But do it within yourself. You know, we talk about this all the time. So you got to do this within yourself. You got to play within yourself. And that's something that Michigan hasn't done. They have made everything public, and they put a bullseye on their back, and they weren't ready when they got hit.
Yeah, I mean, the bullseye on the back is already there. I mean, everyone that comes into Michigan Stadium or plays you, they want to beat you no matter what. So at this point,
that's true.
It's probably best to just, you know, zip the lip a little bit, sit back and say, you know what? We're a good football team. We're not a great football team. And I go back to what James Franklin said at Penn State. I mean, that's the type of attitude that, honestly, Harbaugh could adopt. Hey, we're not great yet. We're not elite yet. You know, we can't seem to beat great teams. We're not there yet. We're not winning the Big Ten. And they kind of go around like they've won a lot. And it's like, you know, it's just not justified. It's not justified, the attitude they have, by what they have provided. You know, the fact is they're winning a lot of games, and you should feel good about that. But you shouldn't walk around acting like a championship team. I mean, they almost mirrored Miami's attitude as far as what they said. I mean, they didn't act like Miami, but the words would say, we're Miami.
Well, certain guys.
Oh, you're not beating us. Yeah. I'm off the train, man. I can't believe in that. I can't believe in something that tells, you know. And I would have loved to see Michigan beat Ohio State. I don't like Ohio State. Period. I mean, end of story. I'd rather see Michigan State win the Big Ten. I'm not a Michigan State fan anymore. I don't like Ohio State, but I'll tell you what. I respect what they do. They find a way to win. And you can't knock championships. And Urban Meyer, as much as he... I don't agree with the way he handles himself or his program. They win. And over there, that's all it takes for him to stick around. As long as he keeps beating Michigan and winning championships, people are cool. They're cool with whatever you do. They're cool with whatever your antics are. And, you know, and Michigan is who they are. They're not going to change. I think they do need to change. It's good for the soul, seven in the title. They need to change. They need to change some things on offense. They need to change. They need to recruit even better. They need to change their attitude. They need to change the way they run that whole program as far as culture-wise. They need to not say as much. They don't need to broadcast the trips anymore. That's not working. Those things aren't working. kids, they might like that, and they might want to go there, but they can see through that. They're still going to go to Ohio State first because they want to win, and they want to, you know, be a part of that first. So, you know, moving on to Michigan State, obviously, you know, Michigan State, it's a weird thing for me because, you know, I feel bad for the injuries, and I know that affected their season. I think that the stand that a lot of State fans are making, you know, at first it was you want to poke fun because, you know, a lot of fans weren't loyal, or maybe the place is empty more than it should have been, or, you know, there's a lot of excuses. I'm not here to make excuses. There's true Spartan fans, there's true Wolverine fans, and there's not. And honestly, you're clearly a true Spartan, but I think that people are tired of what's going on in Michigan State. When we talk about change, would you say that it just has to happen now? I mean, there's no waiting around. We've gotten to the point where, hey, we've won. We know what it takes to win, and we cannot run our program a certain way anymore because this isn't Michigan State football. We've got to win championships. Talk about that. Talk about the culture. Talk about what you think needs to change for Michigan State.
Well, you know, since we've talked about Michigan's culture, you know, I want to talk about Michigan State, and I think a couple of things that I saw yesterday, just absolutely incredible. All right, and this goes beyond the game a little bit. This is more culture thing. I'll touch on the change that needs to be made in a second. Which, I mean, I think everybody knows where we're going with this. We've covered it, it seems like, every week. First things first, you know, when the captains were being announced, you know, Joe Bocci, Brian Lewerke, Kari Willis, you know, there's always that fourth captain. And yesterday when the PA announced Terry Braverman, great guy, you know, had an opportunity to meet him a few times, when he was introduced in the captain, the fourth captain that was mentioned, number 48, you know, he was the team MVP. He was voted team MVP. It's Kenny Willekes, you know, I think the best defensive lineman in the Big Ten. But Kenny Willekes wasn't out there. You know, it was senior day. You know, Josiah Scott, they were saying that they were going to hold him out a game, maybe, to play so they can redshirt him so he can keep playing. You know, after the next couple of years, you know, as good as Josiah Scott is, he is a little undersized. And, you know, when you're undersized, you know, it's best to do college for four full seasons, you know. And he said because of Kari Willis' leadership and everything else, he didn't want to leave his guys hanging. And so he decided that he was going to play yesterday. There were talks that they were going to hold him out just until the bowl game. And, you know, he comes out. Josiah Scott has two interceptions in the game, including the one that sealed it at the end. So, first off, I just want to say, culture-wise at Michigan State, I think there's a lot there. You know, it's not like the dreadful 2016 season. I don't think that there's a lot as far as the culture that needs to change. I think there is a position higher up change, you know, and that's obviously – well, there's a couple, Mark Staten on the offensive line, Jim Bowman, who is co-offensive coordinator and the tight ends coach, and obviously the tight ends had their fair share of issues this season with just drops. Sokol missed a few blocks. I almost lost track of what day it is with the long weekend, but he missed a few blocks yesterday, and then, obviously, Dave Warner, who supposedly is the one who is the offensive coordinator who calls the plays. You know, it was another game. Rocky Lombardi, he didn't look good at quarterback. He didn't look good under center, but he wasn't really working with a lot. You know, last week, you know, we put that game specifically on Lombardi. You know, we thought Warner had a good game plan call. But we also said it did not excuse him for his ineptitude over the last four seasons. Yesterday was just another shining example of that. Look, you scored 14 points against Rutgers. And as if that's not bad enough, certain choices led to the 10 points that Rutgers scored. You go back to that Nebraska game. You go back to that Nebraska game. Certain choices led to Nebraska getting a couple of those field goals. Certain choices led to a bunch of Ohio State's points. Like, defense has been top of the line. I think as far as scoring go, would probably be tops in the country if the offense could make up for it. It would probably help that you're not punting with your fifth punter of the season as well, and you're able to flip a field a little bit. But this is a, you know, losing all Big Ten punter and, you know, not see a little bit of a swing as far as points each way goes. But you look at it, it all starts with Warner. I think changes need to be made. Mark Antonio said, you know, we're going to look at everything in-house. Now, you can take that. In a couple of years ago, after 2016, he said, no, we're not making changes. But here's the thing. As far as how he said this, you can take it a couple different ways. One is he doesn't want to put Warner on blast yet. You know, if anything, we've learned about Coach D'Antonio is that he's a very loyal guy. He'll probably let Warner finish out the bowl season to whichever bowl it is. I saw one projection out back bowl versus Mississippi State. Should be a good game if Michigan State can move the ball. Another way you can take that is we're looking at it in-house. We're not going to let the outside determine how we make our decision. And that would ultimately imply that Warner's staying would not be a good thing. But he didn't come straight forward and say no. It's probably something that they do have to look at. You know, they are going to talk about it. D'Antonio said that he has talked about it before amongst the staff. And so, I mean, that's a change that needs to be made. The defense has been great all season. You know, like you said, Michigan scored, 21 points against MSU, held the ball for 42 minutes, and seven of those points came off of fumbled a punt return on, like, the 30. You know, you look at it, Rutgers' touchdown yesterday, they started with in the 30. You know, their field goal, they started on the 33. So the offense has really just dinged up this defense right now, and I think that a majority of that, you know, lies on Warner's shoulders, injuries or not. You know, Michigan State has built itself up to a point where they should be able, their second string or makeshift offensive line with combination three starters and two second stringers, you know, their second string should, along with that defense that they have, should be able to beat most teams in the Big Ten. You know, they beat Penn State with that same type of setup. You know, but then you go out, you play a Nebraska team, albeit they did get a lot better in the second half of the season. You know, that's a game you've got to win. And so, great arm talent, great kid, great leadership, just not ready yet. If he does ever get there, who knows? I hope he will. I think he can. But, you know, you need a guy like Orky under center. You need a guy like a healthy working under center.
Right. Yeah, I think when we end this on football, because I'm happy to end it. I'm totally geared for basketball. Clearly,
oh, we got a bowl.
Every time it gets to November, I'm 100% ready for basketball. But I'm going to end this in today about football. Obviously, we'll talk more about it. Because of the bowl games, we'll touch on who they play and some things that they need to do both schools for next season, obviously. I will say the thing that Michigan State does a much better job of Michigan as far as culture-wise is they do keep things in-house. It's more about us. It's about the team. It's about the coaches. Whereas if they're lacking in hype or fan support, they're getting consistency with the players. They've won more meaningful games than Michigan has over the years, and they have a better balance on that end, and they know how to win the big game, and they just have a more, hey, we're going to get down, we're going to put our head down, we're going to grind, and we're going to get this thing done. That they're better at Michigan than that as far as the other end for Michigan, where they could use a little bit of that. They always maybe have the the pretty look of being a Michigan football program, getting higher recruits year in and year out, the big house, all of that goes into this thing with recruiting, where Harbaugh's done a master job of recruiting. He just can't win the big game. So I don't think both programs are in the dumpster here. I mean, I think that the cupboard is full, as long as there's no injuries for Michigan State, and next year is going to be a very interesting season. I think both teams will be very good again. And then it just comes down to, hey, things we've already talked about this year. Does Michigan State have injuries again? Who returns? Who's the quarterback? What will happen this bowl season? We'll find out a lot. Michigan, obviously, they're going to lose guys. They're going to have to fill spots. They're going to get more new, young, talented kids coming in. Who's going to come up and step up? So it'll be fun to watch, and then we'll break that down. Let's end on basketball. You know, we don't have a ton of time, but really excited to talk about basketball because obviously both schools are really good. I mean, Michigan State, I was shocked the way they handled that second half against Texas. I mean, it looked like they were going to get ran floor, Tyler, and all of a sudden they ran Texas off the floor in the second half. On that real quick, you know, before we end the show, on what really excites you about Michigan State basketball, I can tell you right now is they can really shoot and they play really well together. That's my first sense on all this.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked, you and I think we've talked off air about this. Like, with Jaren Jackson, obviously, this would be a championship-level team. With Miles Bridges, though, you know where the ball's going to go. You lose a little bit on defense. Like we've talked about, Winston, not a great defender. Langford's hit or miss. And so having McQuaid in that third spot does kind of solidify a little bit in your starting rotation as far as defense goes. Ultimately, you know, the first thing, it's easy to get hyped up for a game. And when you're fresh, having all this energy, it's easy to reach in and make some of the plays that Texas made defensively. But the first thing that goes after the first time out is, you know, your arms. And it's hard to keep that level of energy, whether Shaka Smart's your coach or not, on the defensive end. And ultimately, you know, Michigan State then started controlling the pace. And I think that's one thing that they're going to be better at than anybody in the country this year is, and unfortunately there's no way to really measure this, is controlling the pace the way that they want it. If you can sit there and you can outrun an opponent like they did with UCLA, you're going to outrun them. But if a team like Texas can outrun you, you can slow it down, but speed it up when there's opportunities. And that's ultimately what they ended up doing. You know, we said, like I said, you know, you knew the ball was going to go to Bridges. You know the ball is going to go to Nick Ward. The difference is having it on the perimeter, there's less you can do. There's less openings than if you get the ball inside. And I think that the big thing for Michigan State, just knowing that anybody can do stuff. You know, McQuaid had a huge game against UCLA, not so much against Texas. Well, guess what? Josh Langford stepped up. Winston played right. Well both games, even though Nick Ward disappeared against Texas. I wouldn't say he disappeared. It's just Texas was very well turned the ball over. You know, that I think that was the biggest issue on double teams. So he slowed it up, and they just, you know, reset. And with Winston, you know, they made the right play. So, and then Aaron Henry had a pretty good game until he tried to get a little too superstarish, I think, for Tom Izzo's liking, and took a floater on the baseline with his offhand, and, you know, Henry had a good game. So you have all of these pieces that can step up if Nick Ward's not working. You know, if Langford's not working, Nick Ward is. And so it's just a great feeling to have so many guys, but none that are it's weird to say none that are so much more talented than the others that they demand the ball a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I think that you're right on that end. I think there's a little more chemistry. I think more guys who feel like, hey, this is my turn to make shots. I mean, I think we've mentioned Josh Langford so many times, and he was outstanding in spots against Texas. He hit big shots, and You know, and when we talk about change on the football end, I think Michigan State, you're starting to notice the last few years, they're really shooting the ball outside more. I mean, they're not necessarily a pongy inside team. I mean, they can do that with Ward and Tillman and you know, Goins inside, but really they're becoming a three-point shooting team, push the ball, look for that shot from outside, even early in the shot clock, which I know doesn't suit well with Izzo all the time. But that change is good because when they start catching fire, look out. And when they do play physical defense and they are rebounding and they're pushing and they're scoring, they're a very hard team to beat. So I think Michigan State, so early on in this year, I'll say that. I mean, they're a lot of fun to watch. They're fast. They're physical. But they're really shooting the ball well. And I think Cassius Winston started off this year in a marvelous way. I mean, he can really do some big things this year. On Michigan, then, like I said, the change thing, they're just different on defense. I mean, they're more physical. They don't have the depth that Michigan State does, but their starters are what they are. I mean, I think Jordan Poole obviously played extremely well against Chattanooga, which shouldn't get me excited, but it was nice to see him be a little more creative with the ball. He's a better defender than I thought. Even if you think he's the weakest defender of the starters, they don't have that depth. Scoring-wise, but they seem to find a way to get the job done, and I think John Teske is going to have a great year. I mean, he's 7-1, 260. He's a load down there. So it allows them to pressure the ball, allows them to take more chances as far as being aggressive on the ball. They're not the same three-point shooting team, but they still can hit the shot. I mean, Isaiah Rivers was outstanding the last game. And both schools are just really, really good. There's just no getting around it. I mean, you could argue that it's Michigan State, Michigan, and everybody else in a way. I mean, obviously, Purdue's good. They got a star player. Watching some of the other teams, there's a lot of talent there. I mean, Iowa looks really good. Look out for Iowa. No, we're going to talk about them a lot this year. They look very good. They've had a great start.
And don't forget Indiana when they're healthy.
Right, Indiana. I mean, there's a lot of teams in the Big Ten that are going to be a hard out. And then plus there's 20 Big Ten games. I mean, if you're going to win that conference, I can't see a team losing less than 5 games in that conference. It's just a tough conference. But I would argue that Michigan State and Michigan are the top 2 teams at this point from what I've seen. And it'll be fun to talk about this. Obviously, a lot to cover because, you know, Michigan has North Carolina. That will say a lot about will depth hurt them because they're going to have a hard time pushing pace against North Carolina. But obviously North Carolina has some issues too. The beginning stages of the season are important, but they're not obviously the main parts. But I do think it's very refreshing to know that, you know, both teams look good. And everything I said about Michigan, it could be wrong a little bit. But again, they got a tough four. I mean, their next four games got very tough. I mean, North Carolina, Purdue, Northwestern, and I'd have to check the schedule. They've got one more really tough game, the next four. I think it's non-conference, but I'll have to check. But I do know those are three of the games. So, you know, end on this. What do you expect before the break? Do you see both teams maybe winning out before the new year starts?
I mean, obviously both teams are. You know, the ACC Big Ten challenge was more based upon the previous season's success. But, you know, Michigan State's got to travel to Louisville for it. And, you know, Michigan's got North Carolina. You know, Michigan State's got Florida. You know, Michigan, their Big Ten play opens up, one of their first two games against Purdue. I mean, Michigan State's got Iowa, who, you know, everyone – starting to get a little bit high on. So, look, both teams, you know, these next couple games are going to be telling. I think Michigan State's already played a couple telling games. You look at you look at how they played against Kansas. You look at Texas. You look at UCLA. They very easily could have ended up with North Carolina. And so I think that I think both teams are going to be ready ultimately when Big Ten play comes. You said it is going to be brutal, but these are the two best teams in the conference right now. Can something like that change? Absolutely. You know, Carson Edwards could be harder to stop, you know, but Wisconsin's also got guys I think Dimitri Trice is back from injury. You know, Khalil Iverson, if he can elevate his game to where people expect him to be, you know, Wisconsin's going to be in the fold too. So it's
Ethan Happ. I mean, that goes without even saying.
I mean, Ethan Happ's obviously already there, but
yeah,
you know, like if Khalil Iverson can elevate his game, adding Dimitri Trice after he suffered a season-ending injury early last season. Like, you know what you're going to get from Happ, but adding those two to the mix, if Iverson can elevate, it's going to be a huge thing for Wisconsin. They're going to be in the fold. Iowa's up there. Indiana, if they can get their key players back, they'll be good. So it's going to be a brutal Big Ten season. I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. I still think Michigan State's the best team. I don't know if they're a champ, like an NCAA championship level contender, but you know, they could make a push because, unlike last year, you know, you can get it from anywhere. You know, you can get it from Langford. Langford, a huge game against Texas, ended up mastering the "no, don't shoot that, what are you doing, you idiot?" Oh, okay, that works. Shot. So I think I mean, to see him elevate his game to that level is big time.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a fun season. I can't wait, Tyler, to talk about it more. Again, we'll talk more basketball. Again, we'll talk more football, obviously, in the bowl season. Appreciate it again, Tyler. Look forward to this week, and we'll find out about these bowl games here shortly within the next few weeks.
And I look forward to Cliff Kingsbury.
Again, thanks, Tyler, for sticking it out in the cold weather again. And if you're in the top five of Sparty loyalty fans, and you deserve to be in some sort of club, I think. So I might have to write a letter to the administration of Michigan State. So, you know, obviously.
We're going to write letters to Michigan State, let's get Charlie Bell's number retired first. Let's do that.
Yeah, that'd be a good start. I might start that off with that. I appreciate it, Ty, man. We'll talk this week. Always fun, man.
Yeah, looking forward to it, man. ACC Big Ten wrap-up coming up later this week. Have a pull-up who's going to win the challenge. I'm going to assume since we're in the heart of Big Ten country, that's where everything's going to come to pull, but, you know, it's still fun.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, check for that poll again on our Facebook at Rivalry Radio, Inc. Tyler does a great job with that, so we'll be looking for that Big Ten ACC challenge, obviously, this week. It's going to be a lot of fun. Again, this is Rivalry Radio, where every rivalry matters, but none more than one.